It's time for You Oughta Know, a weekly conversation about all things automotive with your host, Toby Edmonds.
Well, Toby, you know, I just came across an article here, which is, this is kind of an interesting piece. It's in the New York Times op-ed columnist, David Lenhart, and he starts out by saying, you know, because of the holidays, millions of people are going to climb into their cars to visit family, but it's likely that they're going to be traveling, and the statement is the one that grabbed my attention, on the most dangerous roads in the industrialized world.
That's a bold statement.
It's very bold. And so here, given your experience, you've been around, I've been driving around a little bit too. A generation ago, he goes on to say, driving in the United States was relatively safe. Fatality rates in 1990 were roughly 10% lower than in Canada or Australia. And these two places have a lot of open road the way we do. But other countries have fixed things up, and the United States apparently has not. The fatality rate has fallen a bit here. Safer vehicles, we've talked about that a lot, but it's fallen far less than anywhere else. Our vehicle fatality rate is about 40% higher than Canada's or Australia's at the present time. And then we are compared to, for example, Slovenia. In 1990, its death rate was more than five times as high as ours. Today, the Slovenians, not to disparage the Slovenians, but a place that has had a lot of interesting things happen, is safer than... And I guess what he's pointing to is no matter how well we make our cars safer, unless we are really also taking care of roads, we're living in a cocoon of maybe fantasy.
A little bit of a bubble.
Yeah, a little bit of bubble. So I'm wondering, since we focus on cars, but cars sitting in our garage are one thing. They're nice. They're pretty. We can keep them clean and shiny. But every time we take them out into the rain, the snow, and everything else, we do have to go on out of our driveway and onto the roads. What's your sense of the situation, particularly here in Alaska, both within towns and in the great wide open spaces in between? What's your sense of our roads?
You know, up here in Alaska, I'd say we have decent roads. I've driven, in a great many different places across the United States. Some of the worst I'm sure everybody is probably well aware of is in California. You want to talk about potholes. Those are big enough to swallow up an entire car. Mm-hmm. So I think the actual road system up here, as far as like road condition, I think we do the best we can considering that all of the outside, the environmental elements that we have to deal with up here. I mean, everybody, if you've driven in Alaska, knows of frost heaves and potholes that are a result of ground movement. And of course, we have the ever-changing debate about the damage that studded tires
sure,
due to the road
right,
as well.
Right.
But the fact of the matter is we do have ruts to contend with. However you want to argue that they get there, we do have very deeply rutted roads. In fact, we get easily one or two people in a week, you know, doing an alignment check because they think their alignment is off, but no, their tires are just grabbing the ruts and kind of it's causing some problems. So, I mean, I think the roads, given what we have to work with, are about as decent as they can get. The thing that's kind of caught my attention is the quality of driving. I think that as we see shifts from people moving in up from out of the lower 48, people from Alaska moving down to the lower 48, people migrating from larger cities into smaller cities, as smaller cities grow, I think that we're definitely seeing a shift as far as driving skill level. And the other thing that kind of I was actually thinking about this morning is if you have teenagers, everybody loves to talk about how every parent loves to talk about how their kids anymore just don't really feel the need to get a driver's license. It's just, you know, when I was a kid, I couldn't wait. I was like, you know, as soon as I turned 16, I had to have my driver's license appointment that day so I can go get my driver's license. And teenagers growing up just aren't really quite as interested in driving. And so I'd like to see how that kind of shifts those statistics that you were just given, say maybe, you know, 10, 15 years from now, where does that put us if we have an entire generation that doesn't want to get their driver's license?
In self-driving cars, probably. Right. Yeah.
And instead opt for, mass transportation or rideshare programs.
So just to recap, as you were talking, I was thinking we use the phrase when the rubber hits the road. I mean, with the rubber, we have the tires, the car, the vehicle, the truck, whatever. We have the road system, et cetera. And you've nicely pointed out that, of course, since there are few self-driving cars around at the moment, the person behind the wheel is the important third leg in this whole thing.
Absolutely.
And what seems to be appearing, though, and the fingers of suspicion is being pointed at the roads, that in many cases, in many places, road improvements have not been as rapidly made here in the United States as some other places. Some other countries, and I think of Canada and Australia, these are big places, and in many respects, they have aspects of road systems that are like our own, Canada especially, having driven the Alcan a number of times. You know, I say, oh, okay. In fact, my last trip, and I'm wondering whether I can extrapolate from this, was from driving up basically through Whitehorse and, hundreds of miles on Canadian roads, and then hitting the Alaska border and having the road. I can tell you that the road was better on the other side.
Oh, and it's funny because as a kid, I remember driving the Alcan, and it was pretty much the direct opposite.
Yes.
You know,
yes,
as soon as you hit the Canadian border and went over to the other side, you were very aware of the fact that you were in Yukon territory.
Sure. So the long road as you come on into Alaska and so on, in particular, you mentioned, you know, frost heaves, they were out to get us. I mean, I was driving at reasonable speed, tried to, and there were signs, but occasionally it snuck
up on you.
It just snuck up. They were there and they were all over. And maybe that's just one aspect of it. And I know people complain about roads, for example, and potholes in, mm-hmm. say, Anchorage. In right here in Palmer, generally speaking, given the small area, I think things get fixed. They're very noticeable. Attention is done and all of the rest of that. But I just thought that article pointed out that, yes, even if you have a beautiful vehicle, your choice, the most recent Mustang or Maserati or whatever, if you're down on a road and it's potholed, et cetera, that very fine vehicle becomes damaged quickly when driven too fast, and hitting a pothole. And I remember also training as a bus driver long, long time ago to drive for the school district. We had to take a class somewhere. The thing that stuck in my mind was you could not, just remember, if you were going fast and you hit a pothole, it made a difference in terms of what was going to happen to everything, including the tires. And is that your experience?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The faster you hit a pothole, I mean, you're looking at, you know, the difference between kind of a jarring, oof, that was unexpected, to, oh, my gosh, I have a flat tire, a bent rim, a bent tie rod, damage to my brake system, and now I need to have it towed in to have it repaired. So absolutely, you know, speed. But then again, when I was growing up and I was getting my driver's license, I was always taught to drive to conditions, you know, and I can understand there being a dangerous road or a road that has not been well maintained. But to me, the logical action to do when you see that type of circumstance is to just drive to conditions. But then that being said, I also understand stuff happens. I mean, like you said, you know, you had frost heaves that just kind of sneak up on you. Most of the time you can identify when rough road is coming up. Sometimes you can't. And this is also very common too in the springtime when we have the thawing. We have snow that melts and forms gigantic puddles. And when you're driving along, you're like, okay, well, that's a puddle. And then you make it halfway through the puddle, and that's when you discover that the road has come apart beneath it, and there's a gigantic pothole underneath there, and you do damage to your car. So that one's quite frequent too. And to look at it, you wouldn't necessarily think that there is danger lurking beneath that puddle of water. You just think it's a puddle of water.
Right.
So unless you've kind of experienced the harsh reality of it, you might go speeding through there thinking there's not a problem.
Right.
Me, on the other hand, since I have not only experienced it firsthand, but of course, in my line of work, I see it all the time. You know, I try to avoid those puddles of water because you don't know what's underneath them. But, you know, as you pointed out, stuff just sneaks up on you. And right. Speed absolutely makes a huge difference.
So segueing to another aspect of this whole thing, I know that many listeners drive on roads that they might be on a gravel road or may be on a road that has had some sand down, et cetera. And I know that some vehicles are often taken care of by having a flap of some sort, either in the front or the back. Big trucks obviously have huge
mud flaps
hanging down. But what about most vehicles? Are most vehicles these days not equipped with them? And is that because that causes a problem either for the car or truck that you're driving or for those following behind you?
Where you're mostly going to see that is people following behind you. And we have sand, we have, you know, they'll put pebbles down on the road for traction in the wintertime. And then, as you pointed out, vast majority of us, especially out here in the valley, still live on road systems that are not paved. It's normal. It's considered normal. And if you've got a brand new windshield, you know not to follow the person in front of you very closely. Otherwise, and that windshield is going to end up cracked again. Mud flaps are certainly not what I would call standard on modern vehicles.
Do you ever put them aftermarket on any of the vehicles?
You know, we don't. I'm not too sure if accessory shops out there do it a little bit more frequently, but no, we really don't. I think that the style of what you and I would consider a mud flap has gone to a lot shorter, more
right.
molded version that's also painted the same color as the car.
Mm-hmm.
Makes it blend in a little bit more. Now, whether or not they're as effective as the old school version that was literally a flap that was hanging down, that I don't have any experience on, so I wouldn't be able to answer that question, really. But, so you do see that standard. And that does come on some vehicles, the little short, I don't know if you've ever
right,
really,
I have.
Yeah,
yep.
The little short. You do see those, but as far as like an actual, what I would term a mud flap, I don't really see them anymore. I don't really install them. I mean, you do see them on some bigger trucks, bigger light duty trucks, not necessarily semis or those big trucks. But for the most part, I think they've kind of fallen by the wayside.
So you mentioned a moment ago, windshields being struck and cracked and all the rest of it. I don't remember windshields cracking as much in other parts of the country as they do. Are we the windshield cracking capital of the world?
Do I have statistics to back that up? No, I don't. Do I have a personal opinion on that? Yes, I do. I would absolutely agree that we are the cracked windshield capital. I have, I've talked about this before. I have friends come up and to visit all the time. And every single one of them has made the comment that, I've never seen so many cracked windshields before in my entire life. Because we just view it as normal. I mean, we don't replace a windshield until it gets so bad.
Right. Because then as soon as we do, it'll be hit.
It'll crack again.
So are there times of the year we're entering, or obviously into winter now, we're looking out at this beautiful winterscape. Do you think windshields crack more in the winter or in the summer?
I think what you see as far as cracking more in the winter is from chips or cracks that were already there before and weren't taken care of. And as the outside temperatures get colder and the interior of your car gets warmer, I think that's where you see the majority of the cracks come from. But as far as like where their origin story, I think that's more fall, springtime.
Okay.
You know, because you have a lot more exposed rocks on the road system. As the snow melts and all the stuff we put down on the roads in the wintertime becomes exposed, that's hands down where I get the majority of my rock chips. Mm-hmm. Is just from springtime thaw.
And if we think that potholes are kind of sneaking up on us, I can tell you that going down the road, all of a sudden it's not because I'm following closely, but a car has come the other way.
Yeah.
And sure enough, there's
the real
sound
bummer,
of bing,
yeah.
And you say, wait, I've stayed behind. I haven't.
I've been good.
I've been good. And yet someone is throwing rocks at me.
Yeah.
So that's just probably the physics of a rock being thrown up in the air. And it's up there, and I go to the rock. It's not so much the rock is coming to me.
Yeah, of course, everybody has that one rock that they actually see it coming.
Oh,
and then you duck.
Right. Are there some windshields that are better at deflecting? You know, one would think that if it were almost the less angled, or you know, if you have a stand up, the old style truck. Windshields, which are almost vertical, would be the ones that would be most damaged. But as we've got inclined, very nice windshields coming down, that there would be tending to be more of a glancing off effect. Or
you know what? You're absolutely right. You're right. The angle that your windshield sits at absolutely does affect how likely that rock that hits you is going to leave a chip or a crack or whatever. I used to have an FJ, Toyota FJ, one of the newer ones,
mm-hmm.
and it pretty much had a completely vertical windshield.
Sure.
I, the entire time I owned that vehicle, fabulous vehicle, by the way, I loved it. I never once didn't have a chip or a crack of it in it of some kind, because it was always getting hit because it was almost
just
straight up and down.
Right.
Whereas I've had other cars where it's at more of an angle, maybe just a, say, a typical sedan. And yeah, you know, I have cracks and chips and stuff like that, but it just seemed like it wasn't quite as susceptible to actual chipping and breakage than my FJ was.
Is all glass created equal?
No, it is not. It is not. All glass is not created equal. Unfortunately, if you want the really good glass, the stuff that's going to be able to have the best chance. I mean, the fact of the matter is it's all glass. I mean, if you hit it hard enough at the right moment, at the right angle, it's going to chip. It's going to crack. But there are some glass, I think, that is a little bit, it's definitely a little bit harder, denser, and better quality, but you are going to pay for it.
Sure. Okay. Does it matter how fast you're going?
Speed always matters.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm thinking, you know, I'm going 5 miles an hour. That's one thing. The rock may be traveling at speed, but at least I'm not adding to that collision vector. And then the real question is, if I'm going, say, 45 versus 75, somewhere in there, does it matter if I'm going faster? Because I've been told that if I get up above 100, it doesn't take very much to damage the windshield.
But, I think we should try that this summer.
Oh, in a controlled environment.
I have lots of areas for controlled environment. I'm pretty sure we could turn that into a science experiment.
Right. Just all we need are a few good windshields. Okay.
Well, I have heard of a coating that is, I don't know if you've ever heard of Ceramic Pro.
No, I'm not.
It's Ceramic Pro is a coating that you, and you're going to have to forgive me because I'm not super, super educated on this. This is more for detail shops,
okay,
accessory shops. But Ceramic Pro is a coating that you can put on your paint, and it helps protect it. Well, Ceramic Pro supposedly, and I'm sure there's lots of other companies too that have come out with a coating for your windshields.
Oh,
Car Deets right down the road has started doing them.
Okay,
I would definitely, we need to find that out. Maybe I need to pull him in here one of these mornings to have him talk about that, because that is an excellent question. I just thought of it now as we were talking about it, because believe it or not, when I was down at SEMA in Las Vegas, I ran into Jim, who owns Cardeets, down in SEMA, two Alaskans out of the entire show managed to run into each other. And that's what he was down there for, is he was meeting with some people who manufacture this product, this coating that goes on your windshield. So I definitely need to find out some more information on that and see how, what type of defense it really puts up against rocks.
And how long it lasts when it's sitting out there that way. What about the deflector that sits at the front of your hood? I've seen some of those on there. Does that do any good?
Not in my experience, no. Not for rocks. You know, it might help with keeping, you know, bugs off your hood or bugs off your windshield. But those are, they're a little bit lighter, a little bit more easy to, you know, move with as the speed of the wind comes up over, the air comes up over your grill. But rocks, I've never had a deflector save my windshield from a rock, never.
Okay. Yeah, because it seemed also that these things come in waves. Mm-hmm. There's a suggestion that, the deflectors, and you see vehicles having deflectors. And I think we've passed that wave because I don't see as many these days as I once did.
Yeah, it's really, those deflectors were once meant for more keeping the bugs and the rock chips off your hood.
Right.
But it's, we've really moved towards those 3M plastic, and I'm sure you've seen them, like the clear vinyl that goes over the front part of your hood, and that protects it. And it's more cosmetically pleasing too.
Yeah, you can barely notice them. And of course, that brings me to the last thing, which were these leather or faux leather pieces that people would tie on to the front end of their vehicle.
And once again, same concept. They're to protect your paint from rock chips. They were also used as a quick fix. If you did have a vehicle that had way too many rock chips, you just put that on to make the front end look better. But once again, we've moved away from that because over time that cover would rub at your paint and it would rub holes in your paint.
Okay.
So we've moved away from those and once again been replaced by that clear plastic 3M. Or even, you know, some of these coatings that are starting to come out for your paint, like the Ceramic Pro that I was talking about.
Okay. So it sounds as if the bottom line is when we go out and into the world with our beautiful, clean vehicle, you just have to accept the fact that you are in the world and it's going to be dirty and there will be uneven surfaces. And the advantage lies with someone who's going to pay attention and not drive too fast. And but accept the fact that no matter what you do, there will be something.
There are dangers lurking out there that won't necessarily attack you, but they'll definitely get your vehicle.
Yeah. Okay. Any last comments there, Toby?
I was thinking of something interesting over the weekend because I was reading an article about how stats for new car sales is going up.
Right.
But yet we're also seeing an increase in people holding onto their vehicles for longer. And it's a question I get all the time, you know, if I do this repair to my car, will I be able to keep it for another 100,000 miles? And it's such a difficult question to answer because there's so many variables in there that you can't predict. So, you know, I'd honestly have to say the answer to that question really lies in how dedicated you are to staying ahead of the repairs on your vehicle. We have, as money gets tight, people's instinct is to say, well, you know what, I understand that component's starting to wear out, but it's working for right now. I don't want to go ahead and repair it. But what you know, you need to take into account, especially if you're looking to get another 100,000 miles out of your car, is let's use a battery, for example. Say your battery tests marginal or even tests bad, but it's still starting in the morning. You're not really having any problems with it. So you decide not to replace that battery rather than spending $200 on a battery.
Right.
What you're not taking into account is the extra stress and strain that your alternator is going through. in order to keep that marginal battery charged. So not only do you need a battery, but you're also prematurely wearing out the lifespan of your alternator as well. So, you know, making sure that you're staying ahead of those repairs instead of waiting until actually something breaks is definitely my number one suggestion for getting the most mileage out of your vehicle.
Okay. All right. Well, good. It's been fun. Fun thinking about all the bad things that can happen.
Now that we've wrecked everybody's day.
Yeah. Yeah, go out there. Go ahead.
Go drive around. You'll be fine. Yeah. It won't happen to you.
See how many rocks can hit your... Yeah, we should have a contest.
Oh, I'd win. I know I would.
Okay. All right. So we're going to finish up here today. And then we'll be back next week for another edition of You Ought to Know.
And happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Right. Thank you.
You've been listening to You Ought to Know with Toby Edmonds. This program is a production of Radio Free Palmer, Big Cabbage Radio, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of moderators and guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions, please email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.